Hello, and welcome to the 10th episode of Season 9 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Well, hello, Ray, although I feel like I should be saying, hi, Jack.
Because...
Well, because that's what seems to have happened repeatedly to this episode.
Ah, right, hijacked. Yes, you make a good point. You're going to have to remind our audience what it's going to be about then, I think.
Well, I will, Ray. Many weeks ago, before various fines and other major crypto events and a little bit of ill health caused us to postpone this scheduled episode, we promised to do one about my appearance before a House of Commons select committee.
And all this time later, Graham, is it still relevant?
Well, to a degree, Ray, it is, yes. Uh-huh. But I also thought it actually might be worth going into the whole process of enacting legislation, given how important it is for those of us fighting the good fight in relation to financial crime.
Well, yeah. I mean, necessarily, ours is going to be a little bit UK-centric, because it's hard enough finding out how these things work in one country, let alone... a whole number of them. But I think based on limited research, it's fair to say that a similar process is in place across many of the world's great legislatures.
I think you're right, Ray. So in some form or another, this process will have to be enacted. Mm-hmm. So I think in true Dark Money Files fashion, we ought to start right at the beginning.
Yes, that makes an awful lot of sense. Here in the UK, before a new law can be passed or an existing law revised or amended, a bill with a capital B must be started either in the House of Commons or the House of Lords.
Yes, and in order to become the law, the bill with a capital B has to become an act with a capital A.
Exactly. Now, the introduction of this bill, the first that anyone in Parliament hears of it, really, is called its first reading. And this is usually a formality and it happens without any debate.
So what actually does happen then?
Well, the short title of the bill's read out and that's followed by an order for the bill to be printed.
Oh, and that's it, is it?
Well, for the time being, yes.
So presumably if that's called a first reading, it's followed by a second reading.
Well, you would think that follows, wouldn't you? And this is indeed the case, Graham.
Well, it seems logical. So what does that actually entail then, a second reading?
Well, that's members of Parliament debating the principles enshrined within the bill, presumably after they've had time to read it following its publication.
Yeah, you'd hope, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would.
Yeah. And can that happen kind of any time after the first reading?
Well, normally it would be within a couple of weeks of the first reading, but, you know, that's purely convention. And particularly in the post-COVID age, convention doesn't always apply, does it?
Well, no, and not just in respect of legislation, but there we go. And I guess that's probably true unless it's a private member's bill.
Yeah, which is kind of outside of scope of this podcast, I would have said.
I think you're right. So the bill will be introduced, I guess, by a member of the governing party.
Yes, and the response will come from the relevant official opposition spokesperson. Now, in the UK, as in many countries, we don't have a two-party state. We have a number of parties and a bunch of independents as well. Hmm. But generally speaking, the second largest party in the popular vote is the official opposition and has a defined role in Parliament.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for that, Ray. And of course, politics being what it is, most bills will be opposed in some way or the other.
Well, you're quite right, Graham. Unless the bill has got cross-party support, which does happen, but not as often as we might like, the opposition will do pretty much what their name implies and oppose.
Yeah, although I guess that opposition might lie somewhere on a spectrum from just opposing the bill on principle to maybe agreeing with the principles of the bill, but opposing some or all of the manner in which it's being implemented.
Yeah, and I think that latter case is what we're talking about here in this specific bill that we're discussing.
Yeah, I agree. But before we come on to that, mm-hmm. right, the second reading is nowhere near the end of the story, is it?
Well, no, otherwise you'd never have got involved in the Economic Crime Reform Bill, would you? And I mean, it's worth pointing out also that the second reading can go through entirely on the nod, you know, without substantial opposition.
Yes, but it's not common, is it?
No, it's not. And now we come to the bit where you had a part to play, Graham. The bill goes into committee, right?
Yeah, and as I understand it, this is where the individual elements of the bill get studied in detail. So wording might be changed for better clarity, or maybe to cover eventualities that might have not been considered at the drafting stage.
Exactly. This is a line-by-line review of the entire bill, normally by what's known as a public bill committee.
And I guess the clue there is in the public bill committee, and that's why I was part of that process.
Yeah, so Parliament, most parliaments, certainly the UK Parliament, believes it's important to call outside experts and interest groups to inform this review, so to get it right before the rubber hits the road.
Yes, and that, of course, I think almost for the first time in my entire life, allowed me to opine in public on something which hitherto had been something of a private obsession. But of course, through a strange turn of events, I mean, I thought I had quite arcane knowledge, and it turned out it was actually relevant to the reform of Companies House.
I think you were certainly in a very good position to help them understand why the reform was quite vital.
Yes, and also how keenly criminals would be looking for the slightest loophole to exploit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, mission accomplished, judging by some of the reporting post-committee that I read.
Yes, which was very nice. And not just me, obviously, there were a whole bunch of very, very well-informed people sitting on the committee with me. So as that bill goes through committee, every amendment, every addition, every removal is published for each day that the committee sits.
And once that process is complete and all objections have been resolved, the bill's reprinted prior to the next stage.
Which is?
The report stage, Graham.
Oh, God, that's like being back at school. And I got to tell you, Ray, the report stage in my house was never a very pleasant experience.
Oh, dear. Did you not have a successful time at school, Graham?
Not really. Should we move on?
Okay. Yeah, before the PTSD kicks in, I think we better. So at the report stage, sorry to mention it again, Graham, the bill is sent back to the floor of the House where it can be debated once again and further amendments proposed.
Yeah, and I think it's worth making the point here that legislation all over the world does follow a similar pattern. And many people have never had the process explained to them. And I've got to be honest, one of them would be me until I kind of really looked into this as part of this process. And it's quite surprising just how much scrutiny new legislation receives.
Well, indeed. I mean, I remember studying this for my politics A level. Spoiler, I didn't actually get it, listeners. But I do remember studying this process and thinking, oh dear, shouldn't this be modernised? Meanwhile, years later, and it hasn't been. But actually, it does work terribly well, and maybe that's the key to it not having been, you know, messed about with terribly.
I think you're right.
Decades.
Yeah.
And actually, getting back to the passage of this bill, we're still not done yet. So any MP, regardless of their association with the contents of the legislation, or lack of any association with it at all, I guess, can propose amendments, additions, or deletions, even at this stage.
Yeah, they may not be informed, but there you go. And of course, this is almost always accompanied by a vote, which, again, of course, the governing party would normally expect to win.
Yeah, unless there's a rebellion or perhaps antipathy from its own members.
It's happened.
Oh, yeah.
And then after the report stage, the bill usually then has its third reading immediately thereafter.
Which is, in effect, a final opportunity prior to the bill going to the House of Lords, our second chamber, for MPs to agree or disagree about its contents.
Yes, and at this point, it's now very much focused on what the bill is, rather than what it should be.
Yeah, otherwise we'd be here forever and the thing would never find its way onto the statute book.
Exactly. And from there it goes to the House of Lords, which, as you say, is our second chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, around the world, they're elected in all sorts of different ways. Ours is a kind of mishmash, isn't it, Ray, of life peers who have been proposed mm-hmm. and put there, and people are there virtually by... By virtue of their birth.
Yeah, there are law lords as well who have a position in the judiciary. There are also members of the Church of England. Who are there for some reason or other.
I mean, it's an eclectic group of people.
Very much so.
Go on. No, I was going to say it goes into the Lords to go through effectively exactly the same process as the Commons.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But as we've established, the makeup of the Lords is very different from the Commons. And for example, the committee stage may very well have exceptionally experienced judges when you look at the law lords or other law officers who might bring a highly technical point of view to the drafting that wasn't available in the Commons.
And that sounds to me like a very good thing.
Well, you might think so, but sometimes, in order to cover every possible eventuality, a lot of the meaning can become quite distorted by seemingly endless legal caveats.
Yeah, that's lawyers for you, isn't it? I think we should point out this is just our layman's point of view and not a technical critique of the function of Lords Committees.
Which I don't feel personally I'm able to give with any authority, Graham.
No, I was just thinking, having read a few of these laws, though, Ray, sometimes you just think, what?
Yeah, there's this lovely analogy, isn't there, about laws and sausages, which is you don't really want to look too closely at how either of them actually get made.
As long as they work.
Well, indeed. Nevertheless, the bill goes through the same first and second reading, committee, report stage and third reading in the Lords, the same way it did in the Commons.
And then having done all that, it gets sent back to the House of Commons.
Yeah, and if all the amendments that it's acquired during the Lords stage have been made, then it goes to the King for royal assent.
Now, that sounds all very straightforward, unless the Lord is working to a very different agenda or rather strongly disagrees with the point of the legislation, which could result in what's known as parliamentary ping pong.
Yeah, so the bill bounces back and forth between the two houses because neither will agree to the other's amendments sometimes.
Exactly, and it's not... That's not entirely uncommon where the Lord doesn't actually like the tenor of the bill itself, is it?
No.
So that can give rise to a couple of different possible outcomes, one of which is that the bill just fails because it cannot go for royal assent.
And the other is that the Commons asserts its authority by invoking a provision under the Parliaments Act, which allows it to send the bill, some bills at least, for royal assent without the consent of the Lords.
And I think it's fair to say that usually arouses a fair bit of hoo-ha.
Hoo-ha, that's a lovely word. Isn't it an ornamental feature in some stately gardens? Is that
I think it possibly is, or is it? There's a ha-ha as
that's
well.
That's the one.
Oh, no, maybe it's the ha-ha.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm thinking of,
Yeah, also a lovely word. They're both sorely underused these days in my estimation.
Are we talking about ha-has now?
Well, both ha-has and hoo-has. Oh, right, and all that sort of malarkey. We don't use these words.
Malarkey. Often. There's another one. Excellent. So look, when the bill receives royal assent, the King says, let it be, it's no longer a bill anymore, capital B, but an act with a capital A.
Yes, and royal assent is a formality, unless the King wants to provoke a constitutional crisis.
Well, to be honest, Graham, I wouldn't put it past him. Of course, there's a further process, even if all that goes swimmingly, around implementation.
So you mean that granting royal assent doesn't cause the Act to immediately come into force?
Well, I mean, it might do. Depends on how the Act's written, but not always. Oh. Sometimes only parts of the Act do, and sometimes there's a set period prior to enactment.
So that's where a government minister might use, I think it's called a commencement order, to determine when the Act will come into force.
Yes. So I think we can file all of the preceding under background. Here's the big question. Where are we with the Economic Crime and Corporate Transparency Bill?
You mean the one that I now regard as my bill?
Well, to be honest, Graham, we're all surprised it doesn't bear your name at this stage.
Yeah. So the Corporate Crime and Economic Crime and Corporate Transparency, brackets, Graham Barrow Bill, has just finished committee in the House of Commons and is awaiting report stage.
Okay, so it's still got to go through the House of Commons for report and third reading and then go through the whole process again in the House of Lords before coming back to the Commons for reconsideration and agreement to any amendments before finally gaining, hopefully, royal assent.
Yes, and at that point, the minister responsible for the Act may well decide that a commencement order is appropriate given the far-reaching elements contained within the bill.
Like, for instance, requiring all UK companies, both new and already established, to verify the people responsible for running and owning it.
Oh, come on, Ray, there's only, I don't know, about 5 million of them, so that's not going to take too long, is it?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how many are prepared to provide their verification documents.
It will, but it won't be happening for quite a while yet.
Yeah, with or without your contribution, Graham.
Sadly, Ray, yes, you're right.
Well, I have to say, I quite enjoyed that, but it was something of a departure from our normal content.
Well, it was, but I've got to tell you, I also thoroughly enjoyed the process of researching, recording this. Because notwithstanding my somewhat advanced years, I genuinely now have a better understanding of that legislative process than I think I've ever had before.
Me too, Graham. Perhaps I ought to retake that A-level exam. Anyway,
yeah, go for it.
Let's hope that at least some of our listeners now have a similar appreciation.
Well, I hope so, Ray. But looking on the bright side, even if they've stayed the course, it's only 15 minutes or so of their lives rather than the length of time it takes to get the legislation enacted.
Well, that's definitely true. So what's next?
Well, Ray, you made a suggestion the other day, which I thought was unusually sensible.
I'm not quite sure how to take that, actually, Graham, to be honest with you. Was that a compliment? I'm not sure.
Well, it was supposed to be satirical, but it might have missed the mark. I was going to say ironic, but because it's absolutely not ironic.
No.
Anyway, your suggestion was to look back over 2022 and pick up on some of the stories which we might have missed or that just weren't worth including in an episode on their own. And there are some points I think we wanted to underline where there was broad consistency across those stories, which I think is a really good way of, you know, letting people know that, you know, some of the things that we face are very universal.
Well, I'm looking forward to that.